I would definitely put it in the top 10.
It's so good.
A lot more thought has gone into the story.
I think it's awesome.
This is a spy movie disguised as a superhero movie.
There's such clear-cut good and bad.
It's definitely got some horrific elements.
Well, once we go there, you're just going to throw physics out the window.
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
This is like the Fast Times at Ridgemont High of the fantasy world. Yep. Wow. That was something else. Now, kids, your homework tonight is to go home and watch this on television.
At that point in the script, you're actually rooting for her.
And I am just giggling maniacally through the whole thing.
When slashers came home.
I love that they just throw you in there and say, okay, find your way out. A lot of people don't like horror movies.
It's a coming of age, not a horror movie.
But I still love it because it's a slice of life, and I'm okay with that. Tim really wants to like this movie.
I loved the production design.
I wanted more from this movie.
Your reality is not what you think it is.
Oh my God, am I destroying our podcast?
Prometheus has been.
These are ancient civilizations that were separated by centuries, and yet, this same pictogram was discovered in every one of them.
They're smiling.
I think they want us to come and find them.
We're all here because of a map you two kids found in a cave.
Not a map. An invitation.
From whom?
Prometheus? Are you seeing this? They're changing.
Changing into what?
It's moving.
We were so wrong. Take us home!
Hello, hello, hello out there in YouTube and podcast land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, where we talk about horror movies and science fiction films and those key elements that often lift and or separate them from the average genre fare. Are you new to us? Well, we would like to welcome you. David and I have been talking movies since the dawn of time, and we decided one day we might just keep doing it, but do it for the public. And we do it unscripted, so you will hear us stammer and stutter and act like fools at times, maybe. But that's just us. And if you're coming back, then you already know all that stuff and you like it. So let's get on with it. It's Halloween month, David. This is my co-host, David. How are you doing?
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Yeah. Hi. Good. I'm good. Good intro there. And I'm excited. It's almost Halloween time and spooky season, as people say, which should technically start July 5th for anyone, but now it's definitely the month of sort of thing. And we normally start with like an icebreaker and what we've been doing and everything else. Those of you who are returning know that lately I've been on a bent of catching up on a bunch of audiobooks and audio things like that that I like. I just finished the one that's coming out as a movie next year. It's called Project Hail Mary. It's the new one by the same author that did The Martian. I think I mentioned it last week or
Andy Weir,
yeah. And it was excellent. It was great. But more than anything, that book was narrated really well. And I think I mentioned it when I talked about it. It's a guy named Porter is his last name. So instead of going for another Andy Weir, because I'm familiar enough with The Martian, although I haven't read it or listened to it.
Oh.
I got Artemis and thought about it, but it had a different narrator. And I thought, well, I really like this narrator. I wonder if he's done anything else. Well, it turns out, yeah, he's fairly popular, especially in comedy and science fiction realm. And he did another one that Alex, a friend of mine, had mentioned to me probably six, eight years ago. He said, have you ever read any of the Bobaverse? And I said, the Bobaverse? He goes, yeah, it's this book by this guy. It's really, really good. It's science fiction. You'll like it. Everything else, you should do it. And I thought, well, sure. Okay. I'll give it a try. So I look it up. And sure enough, this Bobaverse, the first book is called We Are Legion, We Are Bob. And it is written by a guy named Dennis E. Taylor, who I find out now is a very prolific science fiction writer, modern science fiction writer. And Porter does all the narration to it. And it's a really cool story. It's very science fiction, but along the same lines as like The Martian and or Project Hail Mary, in that it's taken from a singular POV, at least at the beginning of the novel. And actually kind of meta, but it's taken from the same POV all the way through. Basically, you have a sentient spaceship, basically. This guy is a huge dot-com billionaire who decides just as a fluke he's going to have his head frozen like Disney. I think I told you this. And he, the week after he signs the contract and everything else, he gets hit by a bus. And he wakes up and it's like 120 years later. And he's like, oh, okay, so you, the thing worked. You froze my head and now I'm ready to go. You can just put me into a body or whatever. Well, no, science really hasn't gotten that far. And he goes, what do you mean? And when they finally wake him up, because that's him just kind of talking, he still can't see. When they finally give him visual, he's sitting on a table because he's just a head. He's just a, and actually, he goes, if you think about it, you're not really a head. You're just a, really a software program. And he goes, what? So anyway, he ends up being part of this big government thing to put his replicant in a spaceship that can go out into the universe. And he ends up cloning himself several times. So there are more than one Bob. There are several. His name is Bob. There are several Bobs, and they each have their own kind of pseudo personality, and it gets into big interstellar politics. It's really cool. It's a really, really cool. So if you are into science fiction out there and you want to read or listen to something that's really cool, really neat, and modern science fiction, this is the way to do it. Plus the fact that it's like reading a Stephen King science fiction author. He's constantly making references to, like, I look around and this guy has set up his virtual reality like it's from Star Trek, The Next Generation. He even has a freaking captain's chair in the middle with a counselor sitting beside him. So he's making all these meta references to modern science fiction. It's really cool. Anyway, okay. I drone on, but it's worth it. Now I'm into book four and find out that there's even another book after this one. And this Taylor guy plans 10 books. So. Wow. Not that I'll continue listening, because I'm sure I'll catch up to him and I'll have to wait till he publishes the next one. So, but that's what I've been doing in my genre week. I was in the science fiction world and it's really cool.
Well, that's funny that you should mention that, because I was kind of in science fiction world as well with my genre week. I watched a little movie called Annihilation.
Oh, yeah. Natalie Portman is in that, and it's directed by, what's his name?
Alex Garland.
Garland, yeah.
Who I'm a fan of. This movie drew me in for many reasons. Mainly, you told me that it wasn't a young adult movie.
Correct.
Because I always thought it was a young adult movie and just had no interest whatsoever. But one of the reasons it drew me in after I discovered it wasn't a young adult movie is that it's similar to other movies I like, in particular post-apocalyptic movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's also got all these weird mutations in it that reminded me of The Girl with All the Gifts.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, yep. And then there's also some good cheese, kind of like Where Have All the People Gone or The Bubble. Those old sci-fi chestnuts that nobody
Well, and some of Arrival, too, with the whole I've lost something, I've lost somebody personal sort of thing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I like the production design. It's kind of a fascinating story, and I attribute that to Alex Garland because he's great. He did, oh my God, he did Ex Machina. He did 28 Days Later and the new 28 Years Later as well. But like I said, I never watched it because I thought it was a young adult flick. So I'm what? It came out in 2018. So I'm 7 years behind, I guess. The cast is great. It's got Natalie Portman, Oscar Isaac, Jennifer Jason Leigh, who is one of my favorites. Tessa Thompson and Benedict Wong are in it as well. Tessa's now big because she played Valkyrie in the Thor movies. The synopsis is, after something happens to her husband on an above top secret mission, Lena, played by Natalie Portman, finds herself leading a research team into an unprecedented biological disaster of alien origin. What they discover is truly inhuman beyond all comprehension. The movie got 88% on Rotten Tomatoes with 333 reviews. I would say that's fair. It was kind of captivating for me. The mutated bear, do you remember that part?
Yeah.
I started to say it gets 88% on Rotten Tomatoes with 333 reviews, and I think that's fair. I found it captivating. The mutated bear scene is not only reminiscent of Fallout, the show that was just on Amazon last year, but also a really old movie that I liked called Prophecy. Do you remember that? So that's what I say. There's a lot of things in this movie that reminds me of old sci-fi, even old cheesy sci-fi. So that's what I did.
It gets into a lot of, if I remember, because I watched it many years ago or a few years back. It gets into like metaphysics, like changing yourself or transforming yourself in it, because the whole thing's about a shimmer. I remember that. It's the bubble. It looks like a soap bubble kind of thing, right?
Yeah. And it's the state of Florida.
Don't know if it's a different portal or a different world or a different dimension or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's Florida. It's like Florida is now off limits because of whatever this is that happened there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's alien, right?
Isn't it? It is. Okay. And there's lots of weirdness with plants, and like the plants will grow up in like the shape of like a human. So it looks like a zombie kind of, like you'll see a house and a person standing out in the yard. It looks like a zombie, and then you go up to it and it's not even a person. It's like a plant.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre. It's a very bizarre movie. Very Alex Garland.
Yeah. And as a segue also, I think I remember the end of it. To me, I had questions at like the end of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't totally understand everything, mm-hmm. and everything isn't totally explained to you.
No. No, but it was ambiguous enough that I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I don't think I remember being pissed off about it. I remember just thinking that it's a very ambiguous ending and it was really cool. And that's not like the movie we're doing today, which is ambiguous but not very cool, in so to speak.
I'm going to outer space now.
Yeah, let's go to outer space and discuss. We are, for those of you who may just be joining us and don't know what you got yourself into, look at the title up there. That'll tell you. But for those of you who are here, we are going to go back to 2012 and what was at the time huge excitement, because the director of Alien, Ridley Scott, had decided to come back to the franchise after, what, 5-6 movies, some of those being versus Predator and several other very kind of cheesy sort of attempts to keep the franchise alive. Ridley announced that he was coming back and he was going to do his take on a prequel to the Alien movie, and came out in 2012, directed by Ridley Scott. Writer is Joe Spates and Damon Lindelof, which we'll get into when we talk about him a little bit. A brief synopsis for those of you who may not have seen it, go watch it right now because we'll spoil it.
And that would be Prometheus.
Yeah, that's the title. Sure, Prometheus. Did I not say the title? I didn't.
I don't think so.
Yeah, there you go. We begin with kind of an ambiguous primordial Earth sort of scene, and then we dissolve from that into a modern, well, somewhat near future present, where two archaeologists have made another discovery. Basically, the story follows these archaeologists, Dr. Elizabeth Shaw and her boyfriend, Charlie Holloway, as they go on a huge scientific archaeological expedition to supposedly find the nature of man, why we are on Earth, solve a lot of questions about seeding of various life forms throughout the galaxy. And they say it's all because we were visited by these ancient engineers, is what they're called. And through the story, we end up landing on a planet. It's called LV-223, aboard the Prometheus, which is also the title. It's also the name of the ship. And they find extraterrestrial life, essentially. They find the first evidence of extraterrestrial life in a huge pseudo-pyramid sort of structure that they go into, and then all craziness breaks loose and strange things happen, which we'll go into as we go into the detail. And it ends somewhat ambiguously, somewhat optimistically, but not really, and with a coda that is totally ridiculous and doesn't belong there. Had you seen this movie before the podcast?
I have. I saw this movie in 2012 when it came out on DVD.
Okay.
And last night, or the night before last, when I watched it again, I went ahead and watched Alien Covenant again, the sequel to this movie. And I don't hate these movies, but I don't really love them. They're very confounding to me because I think there's really great ideas in them, and I get what he was trying to do as far as his ambitions and the scope, but at times, they don't make any sense, and at times, there's too much. It's like, pull back a little bit. You're trying to do too much in one film. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
One of my comments is, it felt like this was four great movie ideas that he all pushed and crammed together into one.
Yeah.
If he had been doing it maybe as a series or a limited series, it might have worked or whatever, maybe. But I doubt it because so much of this is contradictory. I'm like you. I don't hate this movie. I don't say don't go see this movie.
I enjoyed watching it again, actually.
I think if you're an Alien fan, and those of you who follow us know that for me personally, Alien is probably in my top five movies of all time, whatever genre you want to talk about.
Yeah, it's due for a redux.
It is a brilliant, brilliant film. And 80% of that? Well, no. I think 60% of that is Ridley Scott. The other 40% is Dan O'Bannon and shoots it.
But, well, and Sigourney Weaver in the cast, too.
But again, I think that's Ridley. Ridley's the one that cast them and cast against type. The character of Ripley was written as a man. Mm-hmm. And he cast Sigourney Weaver in that part and said, no, I'm not changing any of the dialogue. Let's just keep going. And yeah, it worked. So they're great. And just like Alien, there are some really great things in this movie. Uh-huh. The production design, the ship design, the uniform and spaceship designs. The music is actually really good in this. It's not as memorable as Alien, but it's really perfect for the sequences that he does. The lighting, the cinematography, a lot of that is good. It's the story where he screws up. And I don't blame Ridley for that. I blame Damon Lindelof for that and Ridley. I think Lindelof is a hack, and I've never liked him. So,
well, he also wrote Into Darkness, which is one of the worst Star Trek movies ever made.
Correct. So. And Lost. He was a huge showrunner for Lost.
Which it left a lot of unanswered questions.
Just like this does, you know? And just like we just said, I don't mind ambiguity in a film. I don't mind you setting up the shimmer and not really ever explaining the shimmer to me. What I do have an issue is if you say the shimmer is good and then halfway through the movie say, no, the shimmer is bad, without explaining why,
right,
I have issues. When you set up that these Okay, the initial premise of this is very flawed. Okay, so we are going to spend a multi-gajillion dollar expedition to go to a foreign planet because these cave drawings say that? That's that's our reasoning for doing that? Makes no real sense. If there had been some
artifact, was that just a front for the company, maybe?
No. From the really silly, really do not like scene when the engineer's awakened, that's why what is not Yutani, it's the other one, Waylon. That's why Waylon is there. He wants to know the secrets of immortality, hopefully live longer, but also know the secrets of the universe. Why did you come to Earth? What's the point? Why are we here?
Yeah, I guess that's true. I was thinking there may have been an ulterior motive on his part that he already knew, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, again, kind of confusing because it's set up that way. It's set up that he does this holodeck sort of pronouncement of welcome to the mission, even though you're almost there and it's been, what, 2 years or whatever that took a year.
The original films, we know that they're nefarious in their motives.
Yeah. Well, anytime this does fall into prequelitis, which is you're doing a prequel, yet the tech, the everything else is much more advanced than the original. Mm-hmm. So how do you explain that? How do you get around that? And you're end writing. You're trying to write Easter eggs and little things and little nods and that will lead to your original piece. So this one has Waylon, a uber super mega rich sort of guy, who is obviously the first name in Waylon Yutani, which is what is the company in Alien. And also in Alien Romulus, the newest one that just came out a few years ago.
Right. So, they merged with Yutani after Waylon died or something. Yeah.
And right.
They're a Japanese company, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But it has – and again, I think it suffers because you're falling into all of the trappings of trying to do a prequel and or a sequel, meaning you've got to have an android. You've got to have the xenomorph. You've got to have – it's got to suddenly get scary when it was science fiction. Now it's suddenly scary.
Well, I think the big problem, and we'll get into it if you haven't touched on it yet, is the fact that he was having trouble committing to it because they went back and forth where he was like, this is an alien movie. This isn't an alien movie.
Right.
And it was like, okay, what is it? Do you know? Because to me, it looks a lot like an alien movie, even though you were saying at one point that it's not.
Correct.
So I thought it was I was more fascinated with the actual astronaut, the one engineer that is left. That, to me, was one of the more captivating things in this movie because I wanted to know more about that race and what happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think everybody sitting in the theater would have liked to have known those answers.
A lot of people in the theater wanted to see a xenomorph.
That, too, if you're going to do that. To me, I think Ridley – and I kind of thought about it on second watch again. I was going, maybe Ridley had this idea, and then the studio said, no, you got to throw something scary into it. You got to have a xenomorph in it. Gave him a checklist. Yeah. Or gave Lindelof the checklist and said, whatever.
And back because to him.
Because some of it seems forced to me.
Yeah,
You know, the whole coda with the xenomorph's birth is like, why is that even here? We don't care. It's just for people to see a xenomorph.
Yeah, and the whole thing with it latching on to the craft at the end. You keep mentioning Damon Lindelof. What about this John Spates guy?
I don't know a lot about him, and I didn't do a lot of research.
Well, he did. He wrote Dune 1 and 2 and Doctor Strange. So do you think it was his idea originally, and then they brought this Lindelof guy in to change things up?
If I was to predict based on their
reputation,
filmography,
yeah.
I would think that, yeah, he's probably the one that talked to Ridley and they had the idea of all of these huge thematic topics. The search for why are we here, the philosophy, the religious implications of it, the what's
Chariots
her line that
gods.
She has. Yeah, man, they practically own South America. But the I believe that because it's what I choose to believe,
mm-hmm.
sort of the philosophy that was behind all of this, even down to the what's her name? Bitters? No, what's her name? Vickers. Even down to her kind of search, I think she had a lot of subtext, but we never got to what it was other than saying, yes, Father. In one point, we're supposed to go, oh, that's dramatic or that's a twist or that's whatever. What? I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it seems like there were grandiose goals and ideas that ended up they threw popcorn elements at, if that makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense? I've got some background. I don't know if you had this in your notes. I got this from IMDb. The genesis of this movie started back in 2002, 10 years prior. And yeah. It was basically with James Cameron and Ridley Scott discussing an idea. And they were talking about doing one with Sigourney Weaver again. But upon discovering that 20th Century Fox were developing the crossovers that you mentioned, the Aliens versus Predators, Cameron said he wasn't going to have anything to do with them anymore. He got pissed off about it. And even though he said he would never do it again, Ridley Scott, I guess, did too, but he ended up coming back 10 years later and doing this. It was originally conceived as a prequel, but then he decided that, like I said, to confirm that the movie would take place in the same universe as Alien and have references to Alien, but it would mostly be an original movie. And I thought, okay, well, that would have probably been better. Why did all of a sudden it seem like an Alien movie?
Well, that's what I mean. Think of this. If they had cut out the stupid snake scene with Feifeld and the other scientist guy being idiots, and instead it had been this quest for finding out where we came from, where the seeds of man. And at the same time, we're trying to find our creator. David is trying to find his creator and realizing that he doesn't really like his creator very much. He doesn't like humans. And he's so much better than them. And why are they the ones in charge? So that you would have a pseudo villain maybe to it. So that would be an homage to Ash from the very beginning,
right,
and Bishop, without it being overt. And then at the very end, we see the shipwreck, the whatever. And we realize, oh my gosh, this is an Alien movie by the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Covenant could just take over from there.
Yeah.
But they shoehorned in all of this stuff. And the only one that works for me at all is the Caesarian scene. That is just, that's a tense, scary, gross, cool, neat, well shot.
When she does a self-Caesarian.
yeah.
That's pretty rough.
And gives birth to a squid that is like hanging over her and she has to crawl out underneath it.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
It was really good. But then this movie is so full of contradictions. And then immediately after that, she stumbles in the hallway and acts like she's in pain. But for the rest of the ending, she's putting on spacesuits and running and climbing up stuff and running from – I was going, you just had a cesarean like an hour ago.
Yeah, you've been basically sewed in half or cut open and sewed halfway across.
Yeah.
But I read – and they could have explained that really easily. They could have had – a suture that was basically like a solder, and they didn't do that. You know what I mean? They just showed staples going in, where it looks like traditional surgery as opposed to like science fiction surgery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they could have fixed that. And a lot of fans had problems, I read, with that she's running around after having given birth instantly.
Correct. So. And baby octopus turns into giant, enormous octopus in order to kill the engineer.
And that's
the engineer
that made
who's
no
going
sense.
To kill her for no reason, and we don't understand why.
Yeah.
Why? He's coming for you, Shaw. Why?
If you're going to get into questions, I've got a bunch. And I may
okay,
be-
good, because I literally listed out I've got probably 20 questions.
Well, one of mine may be from Covenant, but I can't remember if it's in this movie too.
Okay, but tell me.
In Covenant, there's a dust that's like on plants, and if it gets stirred up, it goes into their ear, into their nose, and they're all of a sudden, they've got an alien in them. And you're like, wait a minute, that's not how it works. When did these xenomorphs come from dust?
Well, they do in this too, because remember,
okay,
in this,
I thought they might.
Well, but in this, it's oil. It's a black, oily
right.
kind of very.
X-Files.
And David actually brings it aboard the ship mm-hmm. and doses the guy's drink with it.
Yeah.
In a horribly obvious scene where, okay, you just handed me a drink with your finger in it, dude. I'm not drinking that.
Well, you can hear
no.
it go bleep.
I mean, yeah, he goes, heard that. Here. Yeah. What? Why are you? What? I'm not drinking that.
And why does that give him all of a sudden, I guess it's like they don't, maybe that was Ridley's way of getting around having face huggers. I don't know. But
well,
it makes
supposedly
no sense.
It's the same stuff that the engineer drank out of the bowl at the very beginning.
Right. That made him disintegrate.
And it's supposedly the same stuff that is in that armory, in all of those,
canisters.
What they were, eggs. But they are canisters, and then when they go to that huge armory and they see them all, so it's their deadly weapon. But if it's a deadly weapon that literally you already – and that's the other thing too. Contradictions in movies really bug me and that. We saw the coda to, or the prelude to this at the very, very beginning with the engineer landing on a primordial Earth, and he's obviously very religious or very whatever – and he has this little bowl, he drinks it, and within seconds, he is doubling over and he's turning to dust in the water, and his genome somehow combines with our DNA or DNA, which creates humans. And that's where we all come from. That's the implied scene. Yet.
I didn't get that at all, but okay.
Well, that's the opening.
I know. He disintegrates and falls into the water.
And then they show all of the black dust, oil, little particles.
Oh, like little chromosomes.
All mixed together. And that's the credit sequence with all the DNA forming and changing and then all of that. So the implication in a very heady sci-fi way is that that's how humans got on Earth. Was
and we all have a little bit of xenomorph in us.
We're actually descendants of the engineers.
Okay.
The xenomorphs are not the engineers. That's two totally different species, obviously.
Okay.
But the thing that got me was, okay, so but then boyfriend drinks it, has enough time to go have a talk, make love to her, and somehow impregnate her. So it has time to work through his system and get into his sperm, at least, to get into her.
Yeah.
And then he wakes up the next day with something in his eye, and then he's still going good for a good few hours later while we go to the ship and all, just
and then
all
he's
this
all
stuff.
Of a sudden like, please torch me, please torch me.
Yeah, please yeah. kill me. So all these contradictions just don't work. The engineers, they say, seeded Earth. They created us. And yet now they want to kill us.
Yeah.
And this ship is going to Earth to destroy us. Why?
And
why?
I don't know how they came up with that either. How did they figure that out? It sounded to me like it was
by
all
the
speculation.
Why that I have in my watch notes is, okay, again, technology that for convenience sake that may be really cool, but just because it's cool doesn't mean you need to do it. The things they call the pups, those little laser mapping drones or whatever, which were way cool, but why didn't we send those to look for Jones the cat 32 years from now? Because we obviously have them. Why didn't we send those down in the corridor to find the alien rather than send Dallas?
That's your anyway. Sequelitis stuff, yeah.
Yeah, this is like crap. It doesn't make sense. But, actually, I have an answer for it, at least a Ridley supposed answer that he said. Here, I'll tell you in a second. But so they have these mapping things, and near the very, very end, the captain goes, okay, remove the structure and let me see. And it's a big horseshoe-looking thing that we,
because we saw Alien 30 years ago. We remember, and we go, oh, and he goes, that's a ship. Why would he even think that's a ship? It's a big horseshoe, weird shaped thing. And then when they're there, David says, and it's on its way to Earth.
Yes.
How does David know? Because he played with the globe? I don't understand.
Yeah,
and how did David know to play with the globe?
Well, he sees this really elaborate holographic map. And he sees that, I guess, because of his android smarts, realizes that the planet he is holding is Earth and that's their destination. That's the only thing I got out of it.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I guess, because that we have to do in this movie. Like, I've got, what is the black goo? We don't know.
It's from the X-Files.
So, where's Krycek?
But that would be great if he showed up over the end.
Why does it turn one guy into a zombie? The other guy is still conscious, but he says, torch me. And for her, it turns into a face hugger egg baby or squid baby thing. Why does it do that?
I didn't understand the whole the two guys that come across the snake. I can't remember the character names.
One is Feifeld. I remember that because he's an idiot.
Feifeld.
From the very first scene you see him, he's an idiot.
Well, and he's the one that you think's dead and comes running out later on as like this super
super zombie.
Super zombie. Yeah. Exactly. I was like, wait, because it took me a second to realize that's who it was because I thought he was dead. I was like, why is this happening?
Right. And that whole sequence just makes no sense.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good stuff in this movie. They just need to cut out the bad stuff and leave the good stuff, you know, but I don't know.
And just stuff, if you think about it even for a second, just makes no sense. So the whole premise is we have found all of these cultures throughout Earth's history, and they all have this godlike being who's pointing to this same section of stars. So that's going to be our roadmap for this entire story. And then we get there and we find out from the captain and David and everyone else eventually that this is an armory. Because when the ship lands, there's one pyramid, but there's like four more behind it. So this is their weapons black ops research planet for the engineers, right? And this is where they develop their stuff that they go and they're planet killers. So back in history.
And it's a biological weapon that features the xenomorph. Yeah.
We sent you a map to come to our secret weapons facility? Why would we do that? Why wouldn't we send you a map to our planet that we were there? Just stuff. Why do they hate humans? Why do they not hate humans? How does David know how to work the squishy egg machine and how to translate and open doors and all of this kind of stuff? We never get an explanation. And it could have been as simple as, oh, well, while you were all in stasis, I was learning the alien language. That's what Mr. Whalen programmed me to do. Could have been one freaking line and at least explained why he's doing that. Why would scientists ever act the way they're acting? Even her boyfriend doesn't act like a scientist. He removes his helmet. He's the first person to take his helmet off because there must be air in here. Let's go ahead. Sure. Even though everybody literally in the cast is screaming, don't do that. The rest of them take their helmets off at different times and then put them back on at different times, and it makes no sense because if you're in this room, you have air, but you don't when you're outside. But
acid to melt a helmet onto your face.
Right. We need something to jump on your helmet so we have an Easter egg from Alien there. I'm a scientist, and yet I'm scared, and I want to go back to the ship before the storm. And then I have these incredible drones which have mapped everything, and yet you can't find me and I can't find my way out, and I get lost and end up in the same chamber that everybody else was in an hour ago. And I see an alien parasite, so I think I should pet it. None of these people act realistic. It's kind of like, oh, Ridley's going, if you want a horror movie, I'll give you that horror movie where somebody says, okay, let's split up and
all right, stop. Let's back up. Ridley. We know Ridley Scott is capable. He has done science fiction before. He is world.
He's done two of the greatest science fiction movies ever.
Right. He has built worlds, including Blade Runner and Alien, which some people say are connected even. But we know he is a great director. We know he did Gladiator and other good movies as well. Have you heard him say anything about this movie? Because he has to know that it didn't make sense. It's not like he's not Zack Snyder. Let's put it that way.
Very well said. But the only thing I've seen, and I have it in my trivia, is he was asked in an interview why all the tech in this movie is better than the tech that's in
Alien,
even though this is set 32 years before the other one. And this is set 32 years before Alien.
Right.
And he said, where's the quote? Well, there's two kinds of tech. There's the Atari tech, and that's what the workers and freighters and lesser instrumentation and spaceships get. And then there's like Apple tech, and that's what big corporations and planets have. And that's why Weyland has just the most advanced tech at the time. Whereas by the time you get to the working class in Alien, they're still dealing with stuff from 30 years ago that was primitive.
Okay, I can buy that.
And I said, okay, that to me makes sense, Ridley. I wish you had frickin' explained that somehow.
Right.
Even down to how are you doing this holodeck, blah, blah, blah. And they're saying, well, Weyland has the most advanced tech ever conceived. This is all prototype stuff.
Right.
Yada, yada. But still, there's just stupid decisions, stupid plotting. And I don't know. I've never heard of Ridley say.
Well, the only thing I read, and I probably have it in my trivia, but I don't have to access it. If I see it later, I will. But is that he was going to do a director's cut, I guess, to clarify things or something. But then he decided not to because he said this is the director's cut. And I was like, okay, really? You would think maybe he would have seen the issues that people had with it and tried to fix it maybe if he could. And
I don't know though, because I've seen behind the scenes of him like directing the whole scene with the alien worm.
Okay.
With these guys that were scared an hour ago, so scared of just seeing the giant god and the capsules that they want to run back to the ship. And yet now they're wanting to pet an alien snake.
True. True, because as soon as I saw that, I'd been like out of there.
Yeah, I'd be like, we're leaving now. I don't care how bad the storm is.
Right.
I'm going, dude. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. And that's what I think frustrates me more is that we know that Ridley Scott is not only brilliant at science fiction, he did Gladiator too. He can do great drama. He can do great action. He's extremely
visual. He did The Martian.
He knows plotting and knows how to do things. And yet this seems like somebody else took it. This seems like somebody else took it over halfway through and shunted in a bunch of stuff.
Zack Snyder.
And yeah. It's like a Toby Hooper Spielberg Poltergeist thing. It looks like a Spielberg movie.
It looks like it does look like a Ridley Scott movie, that's for sure.
And so I'm wondering if maybe he had to make concessions in order to get Covenant, but then Covenant is worse than this. So I don't know. Even little things, like they state categorically, because I went back and looked at this online with a couple of things. They state categorically that this is LV-233. That's the name of the planet, LV-233. And at the very end, when one of the worst things in science fiction cinematic history happens and they run in a straight line from a falling shaft rather than run to the left or right. Anyway, but it lands and crashes. And for all intents and purposes, that looks exactly like the ship in Alien. Yet this is not the planet from Alien. Are from aliens.
That was another question I had, because all of a sudden these engineers are on a bunch of different. Well, according to what I read, is that LV-233 or whatever it's called is a moon, but it's a moon orbiting the same planet that the original alien moon orbits. LV-4 or whatever. So they're all close together. But why would there be a crash ship on this moon and a crash ship on the other moon?
Right.
It makes no sense.
That's my point.
Well, I tell you
why. Why not just make
because
it the
Ridley's,
same planet?
Well, it can't be. Because then they would have already fucked with it before Ripley and everyone else saw it. Because they clearly, you would have seen that other humans have been there. And they wanted Ripley, obviously, that crew was the first one to see that. I'm just, that's their logic is what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's good logic at all.
But all of the setup is that this is the derelict ship that is found in Alien. Even down to what we used to, for 30 years, called the Alien Gunner,
mm-hmm.
which is the great big, it's actually the navigator's
position. A lot of people call it the elephant.
The elephant gunner. And this huge set that they built, and he fought the studio to get it made, and it was a big deal, and it also adds to the atmosphere, and it works, and it's really scary, and it's really cool. So we see it in this, but it's not, because that ship's on a different planet, a different moon.
Right, yeah.
So
I think the only reason he did that is because it wouldn't have made sense when sequelitis, as you say. It wouldn't have made sense in the future if Ripley and them are the ones to discover it, because it would have already been tampered with by these people.
I get the impression that the xenomorph at the end goes and lays the eggs that become the facehuggers in Alien. The only issue is this planet would have broken up wreckage from the Prometheus and from the shuttle,
right, exactly,
and spacesuits and everything else.
True. Yeah, this movie doesn't make any sense. It really
doesn't.
There's
a lot of, and it's so frustrating because it looks so cool.
It does look cool.
Down to some of the, yeah.
Just, and the cast it, but is great, just, too.
Yeah. I think it's Nomi Rapace, it's probably one of her better roles. I think she's really good in this. So we could get there if you want to do cast.
Yeah, we can go on to cast if you want.
And get away from my rant.
I wasn't going to do scenes. No, I figured we would talk about just what doesn't make sense instead of scenes. Okay, let's see. We start with Noomi. I always used to call her Rapace, but apparently I looked it up and it's Rapace.
Rapace, okay.
That's what the little audio AI or whatever pronounced it as when I looked her up. So I'll say Noomi Rapace. She wasn't born yet when Alien was released.
No, first time I saw her was Dragon Tattoo, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. She was excellent.
Right. I think she's Swedish. Is she a Swedish actress?
I think so.
I know that's a Swedish author. I'm not sure if she's a Swedish actress or not.
Or Scandinavian or something.
Right. Yeah. I didn't put a lot of other stuff in here because they're all familiar faces. So we'll just talk a little bit about what we know about them. Michael Fassbender plays David. I think he's great. I think he makes a great android. He's really good at it.
He's excellent.
Yeah.
He's great in this. And I love the fact that they show him watching Lawrence and then it cuts and he's dyed and cut his hair.
Yeah.
And he's trying to be Lawrence, which is kind of interesting because Lawrence kind of goes up against his own people as well.
Yeah.
So there is a kind of, see, again, I think that's clever writing and cool subtext and stuff you can play with.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have a guy who turns into a super zombie. So yeah, there's that.
And I read somewhere, I don't have it in my notes, where Ridley fought to get him. He was tied up with another film, so Ridley basically stopped production in order to use him because he wasn't going to not use him. So I thought that was
I did read that.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Charlize Theron is in this movie. She was originally cast as Elizabeth Shaw. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, she had to decline because she had scheduling conflicts. But when another change in schedule had freed her up, Noomi Rapace had already got the part. So she said, then I'll play Vickers. And he said, okay. So
sure.
And she's great. She's good in anything she does anyway. What else do I have on her? Oh, there were other people up for the part prior to Noomi getting it. Do you know who they were?
No. For Elizabeth Shaw? No.
Yeah, for Elizabeth Shaw. Michelle Yeoh was one.
Mm.
And the other was Angelina Jolie.
See, both of them I would cast as Vickers, not as Shaw.
I kind of agree, which makes Charlize seem very good in that part because she plays it to me like an Angelina Jolie type part.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I really have about Vickers. Then we have Idris Elba playing Janik. I thought he was fantastic, but he's very much like Tom Skerritt in the original Alien. There's really not a lot for him to do. He's just the pilot.
Oh, I thought you meant – no, he's the captain. But I thought you meant – I thought you meant two ways. Yeah, I do think he's a lot like Dallas in that he's – he doesn't have a lot to do.
Mm-mm.
He's not in a lot of scenes.
I fly and
he doesn't
plane.
Really impact yeah. the action at all in any way. But he's great doing it. So mm-hmm. he's very Tom Skerritt in the fact that it's a great guy who's kind of wasted in the movie. He could do a lot more.
Yeah. But, yeah. And I also read where Ridley had originally had Skerritt and Ripley, or what's Skerritt's character's name? I can't remember.
Dallas?
Dallas. He had Dallas yeah. and Ripley have casual sex because when yeah. you're out there in Spaceland, you just yep. have to get your gonads on for a little bit.
Get it when you can.
Right. Yeah. Even if you don't have a relationship. And I think yeah. the studio balked at that. So that's why Idris has sex with Vickers in this, because it was something he yeah. wanted to do in the original. And she
well, I
basically
think if we
he looks right. at her and says, if you want to sleep with me, you don't have to just hang around or whatever. Yeah. I can't remember what his exact line says. And then she's like, meet me in my cabin in 10 minutes.
Yep.
I thought that was yeah. great.
Well, and that's after the whole scene where he walks over and looks at her and goes, are you a robot? which is cool, too, because, again, they're kind of making – that's clever screenwriting to me because yeah. they're making an homage because she pushed David up against the wall
yeah.
and held him there.
Yeah.
And I think – that's a red herring. I think David mm-hmm. let her push him up against the wall, and I think David let her hold him there.
Yeah.
But there were people still online arguing that she really is a robot. She's a robot, and she's still alive under that ship.
But there's anyway. All that subtext of her jealousy of
yeah.
The actual Fassbender alien, listen to me, android.
Correct.
David.
Yeah, and yeah. as soon as she's awakened, she's doing push-ups
mm-hmm.
where everybody else is vomiting and trying to get over a hangover, and she jumps up and starts doing push-ups.
Yeah.
So there's all of these kind of is she, isn't she kind of thing. But what worked is the fact that it was – she plays it so ambiguously well
yeah.
and makes it work for me until she – stupid and can't run. She can't run to the left or right. Has to run in a straight line.
Yeah, she has to get smashed by the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Yeah.
Or the rolling donut of a ship.
the bagel. The space bagel.
Yeah. Guy Pearce is also in this movie. He's hard to recognize because he plays Peter Weyland as a 90-year-old.
Yeah.
Do you want to know who were originally considered for that role? That were a little more age appropriate.
Yeah.
Max von Sydow was one.
Ooh.
And Rutger Hauer was the other.
Ooh, that would have been interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. When the story requirements temporarily changed, that sounds very suspicious right there. Guy Pearce was subsequently cast. I think that's why we have him in Covenant as a young man. We get a flashback of him. In that.
Okay.
Logan Marshall Green plays Charlie Holloway. I'm a big fan of this guy. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not.
No.
He reminds me very much, and I said this before, of a – damn, I can't think of his – oh,
generic.
A very – he no, he reminds me of Tom Hardy, like a smaller,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
less built Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
He was the guy that was the lead in that movie, The Invitation, that I told you that I've added to the list and that we need to cover. It's
okay.
It's
yeah.
Not the vampire movie. This is a different movie. This is a low budget movie about a guy going to a party that his ex is throwing. And anyway, it's great. It's just a really good movie that not a lot of people know about, I don't think. Anyway, he's in it. He's the lead and he has long hair. And he reminded me of Tom Hardy in that movie too. And he reminds me of Tom Hardy in this movie.
Yeah, I think if you YouTube everything wrong with Prometheus, that's what he says about this. And he goes, and there's that guy you get when you can't get Tom Hardy.
Okay, that's funny. Now, there was another person considered for this role. And you know who it is?
No.
Well, it's connected to the second film. It was James Franco. And he later plays the one in the sleep chamber at the beginning of Covenant that dies because it catches on fire.
Okay.
He's the – and his wife is the one that ends up being the lead of the movie. I can't think of her name. But anyway, I'm jumping ahead to another movie. But anyway, James Franco was considered for that role as well. Sean Harris plays Fifield.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be seeing him again really soon.
Okay, then.
Like maybe next week.
Oh, okay.
But we did see him last season in The Green Knight. He plays the king that's technically King Arthur. They don't say that, but he's the king in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's great, except when he's an android on or a zombie on steroids.
Yeah, or a...
Which looks like CGI anyway.
It's interesting because my assumption, having watched this movie for like three times, was that these were scientists that Weyland had put together to help him do this.
Well, one of them, he's a geologist, I think. He looks at rocks.
Well, yeah, one's a geologist, one's a biologist. Both Shaw and her boyfriend are archaeologists. So I assumed they were all scientists, but when you go to IMDb, they're all called mercenaries. So I didn't get that. Again, that's another thing that I didn't get from the movie.
That no, these guys I didn't get that at all.
Were mercenaries. But when you go to IMDb, all of the lesser guys are mercenary one, mercenary two, mercenary three, mercenary four.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
And then Rafe Spall plays Milburn, who is, I think, the guy that's hanging with Feifel when they find the snake.
I don't know if he's that guy or if he's the pilot.
Oh, maybe you're right, because there's also Emmon Elliott who played Chance, maybe. Was it Chance that was with Feifel when they find the snake?
Honestly, I don't remember because the names are nondescript, too.
I
remember Feifel because they kept asking for him when they were lost.
Right.
Feifel, where are you? Feifel, where are you doing? And I remembered that name imprinted.
I was thinking it was Milburn that was with him because Milburn, they both look kind of dopey. And like, they're kind of like the Yaphet Kotto and the Harry Dean Stanton of this movie.
Well, whomever, Milburn is the one that was wearing the glasses, who gets the snake, and who also says that when they're having the stupidest debrief of all time with that is, again, an homage to Aliens, with all of them sitting in the big cargo bay watching the holodeck, and they all get to have their own little quips and talk, all right, settle down, people, settle down. Anyway, he's the one that really questions Shaw. And says, why would you even do that? Why are we even on this? He's very antagonistic.
Yeah.
Almost.
Right. I can't remember who Chance was, but he looks like a little bit like Tony Shalhoub, like a skinny version.
Pretty sure Chance was one of the pilots. There were two pilots.
Okay, yeah. There's two pilots and a captain. The captain's Idris Elba. Yeah. There's Chance. And then the other pilot is Benedict Wong, who we know now very much so from Doctor Strange and a lot of Marvel. And he's great, but he's not used very much in this at all. They basically commit to a suicide mission at the drop of a hat. I was like, what?
Yeah. Again,
let's go kamikaze.
They have nothing to lead up to that.
No.
I found them more interesting than Feifel and Milburn.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Your friend Kate Dickey is in this movie. She plays Ford, another scientist.
I can't remember
what she is. Is she a doctor, maybe? She may be a doctor.
She was the doctor, the medical one.
Yeah, I think she was. Ian White played the last engineer. He's a big guy that plays a lot of like aliens and monsters, kind of like the guy that Del Toro uses. I can't think of his name.
You know, again, a plus for this movie. I like the engineer's design.
Yeah, very much.
They look very similar to, you could have seen them be Easter Island heads. You could have seen them be Aztec gods. You could have seen them be Egyptian pharaohs.
So, they have
a lot of the basic shape look of ancient astronauts, sort of thing.
Totally. So. And then also Patrick Wilson is in this movie. We just saw him in The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2 last season. He plays Elizabeth Shaw's father on a videotape or on a movie that she sees. He is actually only 6 years older than Noomi Rapace, but he plays her father in a flashback movie scene.
Yeah.
As far as awards, the Oscars and BAFTA awards nominated this movie for visual effects. I totally get that, but it didn't win. It was a Saturn nominee for film and supporting actor with Fassbender. Very few wins anywhere. Even the smaller circuits didn't give this movie wins. And it is not on the 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list. So no surprise there, really, except for the visual effects. Yeah. So that's what I have for cast and awards.
Cool.
But that's a great cast. It's a shame.
I had just two or three trivia points. One was one of the ones I mentioned earlier about Ridley said that the tech was Apple tech compared to regular Atari tech. Mark Streitenfeld, who did the music for this, which I said the music was really good, did something really interesting. He had the orchestra play his compositions backwards.
Yeah. I heard that he recorded it and played it backwards.
Yeah. He had them play it backwards, and then he reversed the recordings to add a really weird resonance and ambiance to it, which is kind of cool. That's a key. That's not a trivia. Never mind that one.
I was just going to say this is the horror Lovecraftian side of me. In 2012, Del Toro, who we were just talking about, Guillermo Del Toro, declared that his long-proposed adaptation of At the Mountains of Madness was indefinitely delayed because he felt this film was extremely similar to the approach he had penned for that novella, even to the point of having scenes that would be almost identical. Both movies share identical set pieces and the same big revelation at the end.
That's one of my keys was that. Yeah.
Well, a movie that hasn't been made.
No, was Mountains of Madness.
Oh, the story. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The novel. I have to prepare for his role, David watched The Man Who Fell to Earth. I thought you would like that.
Say that again.
I thought that was to prepare for his role as an android. Michael Fassbender watched The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Oh, I have that. I've got that and some others that I just put them in keys. I didn't put them in my trivia. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Because it is an inspiration kind of.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I mentioned that there's this shared world maybe between these movies and Blade Runner. It says in one of the early scripts, the company was called Weyland Tyrell Company, suggesting a merger between Weyland and the Tyrell Company from Blade Runner, confirming that those worlds were shared.
Yeah, I could see that, especially Android-wise. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
It makes perfect sense, actually. And then the only other thing I've got, and I don't want to read all this because it's too much, but there was another version of the script where it has, like you said, you mentioned that it touched on religious things, and this was a lot more religious forward, including the implication of a being Jesus Christ as well.
Who being Jesus Christ?
Okay. Well, the engineer that his kind, well, it says in the original script, it said by the awoken engineer that his kind took a child from Earth back to their home world to learn about their values and then sent him back to Earth in an effort to stop humanity increasing aggression. So he was subsequently crucified, a la Jesus Christ.
Huh.
So
okay.
I think it ties into the whole James or whoever the guy is that wrote the Chariots of the Gods stuff.
Oh, Eric Von Däniken.
Right. Which is a huge key in this movie.
Oh,
which
yeah.
I guess is a good segue now that you mentioned
sure.
it. So.
Yeah, that is a huge key. Eric Von Däniken created this entire mythos that influenced so much of our youth. I read Chariots of the Gods and several of his books and all the people he inspired with UFOs and ancient astronauts, and we were visited by an alien race. And it kind of led to, even now, there's a big theory of panspermia, meaning the seeds of life in the galaxy actually are planted. They go in the celestial void in between planets and go planet to planet to planet. And that's why you'll find life on other systems very similar, because they have basically the same makeup.
But they're and xenomorphs. That's kind of what this is. They have to merge with whatever's on that planet.
The engineers are not xenomorphs. Xenomorphs are a totally different species.
I think they need to come up with another name than engineers, but.
Oh, I agree, but that's what they called them.
Yeah, that was really convenient that that monster grew really big with tentacles so that he could fight the guy.
Oh, yeah, and before he killed Shaw?
Yeah,
that was awfully convenient.
Yeah.
Squid baby turned into giant squid baby.
Yeah. They do grow fast, but man, that thing was giant.
Yeah. I've got lots of literary references too, which you probably have.
Oh, maybe. So, I don't know.
Chariots of the Gods, the Bible, of course, Greek mythology, because that's where Prometheus comes from.
I was going to say, Greek mythology was my first key. I definitely had that.
Because he challenged the gods, sort of thing. So, kind of like we were doing them, or the engineers were doing their race, or whatever.
Right.
I've also got Paradise Lost, the whole Adam and Eve, Lucifer, snake, all of that.
Really?
Because
why?
David is kind of played as Lucifer starting about halfway through the movie. He's the one that sets everything in motion. He puts the drop in the guy's drink. He's the one that opens up the astro lab or whatever. He's the one that brings the black goo aboard the ship. He's the one that's going to put Shaw in stasis so that she has the alien gestating inside her.
Yeah, you're painting him as a bad guy, though. And I don't think Lucifer's necessarily painted as a bad guy in Paradise Lost.
True, he's more the fallen type.
And he's also one of the reasons he questions God is because he is in love with man.
True.
Yeah.
True.
So, I see where you're going as far as there is a lot of religious metaphor in this movie.
Yes.
For sure. You mentioned that to prepare for the role, Michael Fassbender studied Bowie and The Man Who Fell to Earth. I've got that he also studied Blade Runner as well, which is another Ridley Scott film, and a movie called The Servant, which I am unfamiliar with.
And as am I.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, of course.
And this last one you're going to love. For his walk, he studied Greg Louganis, the Olympic diver.
Oh, the diver. Yeah.
He took that walk from Greg Louganis. I thought that was interesting.
Interesting. That is interesting.
It is. Can you imagine sitting down to prepare for a character thinking, I'm going to do this, but I need to watch some videos of some old Olympics.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very strange. Did you have any others?
The keys I've got. Oh, Foundation, the Asimov thing, because even the series that they've got on Apple now, a lot of it comes from from holograms, especially holograms of the creator, essentially, in Foundation. And yet the holograms turn out to be lies. He's not telling everything in the holograms. which is, it kind of got me when I realized, oh, he does this whole setup hologram, but he's really on the ship the whole freaking time.
Yeah.
So, yep.
This is one I lifted from IMDb. The concept designers were named Neville Page and Carlos Huante, if I'm saying that right. And they cite classical statues of Greco-Roman gods, the works of J.W. Turner, a painter whose trademark was brightness, and William Blake, which is the one that stands out to me the most. William Blake mm-hmm. was a poet, but he was also a painter of religious symbolism. Okay. And I don't know. I've got a book, like a coffee table book of his, because his paintings are pretty far out. And then the Statue of Liberty. Don't know why.
Yeah.
I guess because of the big head, maybe.
Yeah.
Of course. The big statue of the head. And then Michelangelo Buonarroti. I'm not even sure how to pronounce it.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? It's Michelangelo. I just didn't realize that he had a last name. I'm used to him being like Cher. It's Michelangelo's David.
Yeah, I thought David. He was Cher. That's great.
Anyway, I don't know why I was trying to pronounce it. Michelangelo's David is another one. And then lastly, Elvis Presley. As these were the visual influences for the design of the engineers. Elvis Presley? That's weird. Anyway, that's what those two guys said they used for their inspiration, that list.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very strange.
Yeah, I think they kind of screwed up in the fact that they didn't use more Geiger in this because he was such an influence on the first movie and on all the subsequent movies.
And I think, wasn't he still alive? Didn't he want to be a part of it, I think?
I think so.
From
what I remember. Like a lot of these this decade or last two decades sort of movies we cover, you can find a lot of information on this on YouTube and doing research and everything else, and a lot of opinions one way or the other. But I just think it falls into that flawed masterpiece sort of category.
Very much so. I totally agree because I really want to like this movie.
I do too.
Yeah.
But I felt the same. Sadly, I felt the same way about Romulus. So there's that.
Well, I thought Romulus was pretty good. It's just another haunted house movie.
It was pretty good, but it had the same kind of didn't make sense flaws that this one had.
Now, I don't Not think it as had bad nearly as many. No.
No. No, because I don't think it was reaching, literally, reaching for the stars like this one was.
Yeah.
And falling short sort of thing. But anyway, yeah. I'm glad we watched it, and it is science fiction, which gave me warm fuzzies. So that's
yeah,
good.
And it is a little scary, so we did it in October.
Yeah.
Happy Halloween! Yeah, yeah, I always have a hard time finding scary sci-fi movies from your list. So this is why we're going to do two horror movies in a row next time.
Yay!
And we'd like to thank you folks for joining us out there. We hope you, feel enlightened about our conversation of this movie. I'm not sure I do because I still don't understand it.
Ditto.
I just know that it's pretty and I want to like it, but it's got a lot of problems. And we'd like to know what you guys think. If you want to give us some comments down below, and maybe you could enlighten something to us.
Please.
And if you enjoy what you see here or hear here today, we have other shows on YouTube in particular. We have little short shows, as well as if you go over to Patreon, where you could really help support us, we've got some additional shows that are basically on different tiers. Some of the stuff is free. Some of the stuff is subscription-based. The subscription-based is primarily shows that we do on sci-fi and horror television, including Star Trek, the original series. We've done a couple of seasons of that episode by episode, as well as The X-Files, mm-hmm. where we're currently in the fourth season doing those episode by episode. And we could always use your help over there. And until next week, David, when we'll be deeper mm-hmm. into October and maybe a movie with someone that was in this movie and maybe a movie with something you're terrified of.
Mm-hmm. I've already watched it and done my research. I'm terrified even to talk about it next week. So
great.
That'll be fun.
I will see you then.
It'll be scary.
Bye.
Bye.